WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A mother and daughter from suburban Chicago are the first two Americans to be released by Hamas after they were taken hostage in southern Israel on October 7th. Judith Renan and her 17-year-old daughter Natalie have been turned over to Israeli forces at the Gaza crossing into Egypt. Their rabbi, Meyer Hecht, says the two were visiting a kibbutz near Gaza.
We have this tremendous gratitude to God for his kindness and allowing them to go out. At the same time, we are deeply and painfully concerned for the 200 plus hostages that are still there in Gaza.
Meantime, President Biden today, when asked whether Israel should delay a potential ground invasion of Gaza until more hostages can get out, Mr. Biden said yes. CBS's Tina Kraus in Tel Aviv has the latest on aid to Gaza.
The UN Secretary General visited the crossing from Egypt into Gaza Friday morning, pleading for humanitarian aid to be allowed through as soon as possible.
It's absolutely essential to protect civilians, and it's absolutely essential to make humanitarian aid come to the Palestinians in it.
President Biden says he's confident the aid will get in soon.
It's back to square one for Republicans in the search for a new House Speaker. They've dropped Jim Jordan as their nominee after he failed in a third vote today. Congressman Jordan saying,
I thanked every one of our colleagues and said I will work as hard as I can to help all of you, help our team, help us get a new speaker and go do the work that the American people want us to do.
United Auto Workers Union President Sean Fain says he's making progress with two of three car makers, but declines to expand the auto strike now. WWJ's Jeff Gilbert in Detroit.
Fain says GM and Stellantis have moved in the past week, but not Ford. While he didn't order any new plants out on strike, that remains a possibility at any time.
Our goal is to get the best agreement possible, not to strike randomly just for the hell of it. Our strategy means we escalate if and only if we think it will win big.
There are currently 34,000 UAW members on strike and about 6,500 on layoff. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
The Portland Association of Teachers says its members are ready to go on strike November 1st. Union President Angela Bonilla.
UPS managers have a choice. They have a choice where they can step up and prioritize Portland students and settle this contract.
Teachers want a cost of living adjustment of 21.5%. The district says it's not getting enough funding from the state to meet that demand. On Wall Street, stocks tumbled. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. The Waukesha School Board has approved over $12 million in capital improvement projects for the district's three high schools. The projects, funded through a combination of pandemic relief funds and district reserves, will be included in the 2023-24 budget. The upgrades encompass auditorium improvements at all three high schools, HVAC upgrades at Waukesha North and South, and various athletic enhancements. There's a $50 incentive for a Milwaukee program to help men be better fathers. Tomorrow is the 2023 Milwaukee Fatherhood Summit. It's hosted by Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson and aims to offer information and services in areas like health literacy, employment, and child support interest debt relief. Those taking a survey at the event at the Destiny Youth Plaza will get a $50 gift card. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles.
Mads here with the Mad Music Menu, your new curated weekly selection of delectable music treats local DJs will be spinning all across town. Follow along on Instagram at Mad Music Menu. Today, Friday, October 20th, we start at Bandit Taco with Audio Max spinning from 7 to 11 p.m. Jeff Kay is setting the mood at Nashville from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. And starting at 10 p.m. is 92.7's very own Mad Unity Radio Show with a special analog set featuring guest Paul Gordon as well as host Cosmo Brown. And I'll be making an appearance to tell y'all why I started this menu. DJ Koale caps off our night at Rigby from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And big shout out to Kitty Spit and Clown Baby, two Madison DJs throwing it down at Pull the Shea Club in Chicago from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. If you're heading down to the Windy City, go support these talented DJs. Come out and support these fantastic local legends and dance locally. Remember to follow at Mad Music Menu on Instagram for a fresh new menu every Wednesday at noon.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Policies.
Anything we can do without having to do any more work, any more policies, is probably a very good thing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Have we hit rock bottom yet? Has the House Republican Party, have they bottomed out? Have they crashed yet? Have they gotten as far down as they can go? Answer, no, not even close. Because here we are again, another kind of snow day? Half a day? Is this like an in-service day? They came in, failed to vote on a new speaker, and then we're going to recess. Let's go to lunch. Yeah. And again, remember, we got real problems going on. There are real problems going on, and no one in the House to deal with it. Now, what's interesting, and I find this quite remarkable, that you've got a number of Republicans are going, we got other things to do. We're not sticking around. So now, instead of 217, the magic number to get elected, Jordan would have needed 214. So the bar was lower. So obviously, with the bar being just a little bit lower, maybe third time was the charm. Oh, no, that wasn't it. In fact, I think Matt Gaetz probably put it best. And I very, very rarely quote Matt Gaetz in a positive. He said Matt Gaetz was furious, angry, ticked off. He said that Jim Jordan was knifed by secret ballot anonymously in a closed door meeting in the bowels of the Capitol. I'm going, pretty sure we saw that on TV. But remember, these are the people who, in a union election, we got to have secret ballot elections. But for the speaker, knifed by secret ballot. He was knifed by a secret ballot. Remember that, union folk? Remember that, workers, when the companies come to you and go, got to have a secret ballot. But, also, again, two Matt Gaetz quotes in one day. He said on Twitter, I'm told I have a punchable face. Yeah, you do. But here's the thing. Jordan lost again. Not surprising. This is one of those moments where in the secret ballot election, when people, could vote their conscience, 86 Republicans came out for Jim Jordan. 112 in favor of moving on to someone else. And five voted, I'm here. I don't really want to get into this pie fight. So now the lawmakers are going to go home. They're going to spend the weekend at home. They're going to, you know, probably hide. And I guess back on Tuesday, just going to take Monday off entirely. Just give it up. And what's interesting is you've now got the race. You've now got the race to who's next. You know, who's the next Republican that they're going to throw into the mix here? Who's the next person that they're going to jump in? Is it going to be Mike Johnson from Louisiana? Who? Yeah. Is it going to be Byron Donalds? Is it going to be, you know, from Florida? Is it going to be Kevin Hearn from Oklahoma? Jack Bergman from Michigan, who my friend Jeff Timmer says is a conspiracy theory lunatic. I don't disagree with that. Is it going to be any of those crackpots? Now, here's the thing. I look at Byron Donald. I look at Mike Johnson. I look at Pete Sessions' name got thrown in there, too. I look at them and you go, non-starters from the beginning, if you're a Democrat, because all three of them joined the 147 Republicans who voted to overturn the election. So I don't know how you can, in any way, shape, or form, choose them. Just saying. And Byron Donald, didn't he try and make up a bunch of stuff about Hunter Biden? And now we're going to trust him to run for speaker? No, I don't think so. But it should be fun and entertaining, if nothing else. Now, look, understand. I make light of this because I am so frustrated and angry. Because the reality is, these people are so dysfunctional. For instance, there was actually a Republican from Florida, Greg Stoob, whatever his name is, who is evidently holding a resolution on the floor to remove Patrick McHenry as the temporary speaker. So not only did they oust their speaker, there's a guy who they want to oust, the temporary guy, which is interesting because McHenry has already threatened to quit. So, I mean, how much more does the American people need? How much more do they need to say this is not a serious party? These are not serious legislators. These are people who want to be in the minority. Pretty simple to me. But here again, as I've been saying, while it's fun to make jokes, while it's fun to make light of how dysfunctional this is, the deadly serious reality is there's trouble around the globe. There's things that need to be done here at home. And while the Republican Party still hasn't hit rock bottom, we've got real problems. Now, what I find interesting is the news, how the news media is covering the bullying that went on. But Rick, you know they're just being Republican. You know, Republicans are just being Republicans. No, there's some death threat stuff going on. There's some harassment going on. CNN played a clip of some guy using a bunch of profanity and oddly enough, played most of the profanity, just not the F-bombs, of this guy, you know, talking to this legislator's wife about how he's going to follow her to the beauty shop and they're going to harass and molest her and all this stuff. And what's interesting is watching the panel of faces horrified. Oh my gosh, I can't believe this. And you have the, you know, the death threats going on and you have this kind of the bullying, you know, Don Bacon, the representative, you know, who they say is a centrist Republican. He says bullying don't work. Well, you know, yeah, kind of a little bit does, because your wife slept with a loaded gun reportedly. But then again, I thought about it. Probably does that anyway. Doesn't want him anywhere near. I get it. But here's the thing. Every lawmaker that voted against Jordan, every one of them, angry phone calls, messages, all kinds of stuff. In fact, Bacon was one of the guys who put that stuff out. You got this Drew Ferguson. His family started receiving death threats. And this is one of these moments where, now understand, I'm not advocating for death threats or harassing phone calls or any of that intimidation stuff. What I'm finding interesting is the response by our media that Republicans are being bullied and Republicans are getting death threats and harassed. I got to tell you, I heard the call on CNN. It was much nicer. It was much nicer than, I guarantee, what AOC gets. It was much nicer than anything Ilhan Omar gets or Rashid Tlaib. And while I may not be fans of theirs, I guarantee you they get much more vile garbage. My friends at the teachers unions get much more vile garbage. They send me their phone logs. And this is one of these moments where it's interesting how our media now cares. They now care. They now care that it's Republicans being bullied by Republicans. It's now Republican legislators getting death threats from the people that they've been feeding outrage to for decades. And the thing is, you know, it was reported today that, you know, we have the House Freedom Caucus and Donald Trump, you know, they've backed Jim Jordan and these crazy people who are not palatable to the majority of this country. And I read this piece. I'm not sure where I read it, but they said, you know, the Freedom Caucus and Trump and, you know, conservative commentators and influencers like Sean Hannity, you know, they were pushing for Jim Jordan. And I'm going, you know, maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is we've made this a horse race instead of, hey, how do we get something done? Because you know what I'm not hearing from any of these people? What their agenda is. Now, I do find it kind of interesting, and I remember Thomas Massie, the Republican from Kentucky's statement that, you know, a little pressure, you know, they're going to put these people who are voting no, going to put them through the meat grinder, and they'll cave by the end of the week. And I got to tell you, that never works for me. I'm one of those people who, and I got to think some of these other legislators are too. If you push me in a certain direction, I am going to push back twice as hard. So, you know, that never seems to work. Because here's what I know. I know I can turn my phone off. If you're going to call me 1,000 times, I can turn it off. I know if you're going to send me messages and angry stuff, I cannot read them. Now, understand, a congressional office, you've got staffers who are answering the phones. And yes, they have to put up with some of the... And you know what you do then? What we used to do in the old days. You hang up on them. See how that works? This is interesting times that we're in. And I got a question of how much further it goes on the Republican side. And here, I got to have an optimistic moment. Because I gotta, in this moment, be a little bit optimistic. Could this be the fever breaking? Could we be at a moment where maybe, you know, the problem is staring itself in the face in the mirror? Could it be that the Republican Party is now looking at the problem and the problem is them? And maybe, I don't know, I'm hoping to go home, a little reflection over the weekend after not having done their job for a couple weeks now. That maybe they realize they are the problem. And maybe the solution is just surrender. Now, as I've said all along, majority should win. Hakeem Jeffries keeps getting the majority of votes. You know, in a secret ballot kind of election series, in any election, you know, the one with the most votes usually wins. Except if you're running for president with Electoral College. I do want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Lots to get to. Also want to hear your thoughts back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So there's the question. Have we hit rock bottom yet? And how bad does it have to get before we admit it's rock bottom? And what does rock bottom look like? Do we have to have a crisis in this country that we can't address and people literally die because of the dysfunction that we have? I sure hope not. Let's go to the phones. We've got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you today?
Oh, not bad. Just to sort of review what happened. So Jim Jordan runs for office. First vote loses by 20 votes. Second vote loses by 22 votes. Third vote loses by 25 votes. They convene. There have been meetings in between, including the last one. And at virtually every one, tempers are so high that the people need to be separated, bodily separated from people like Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz, people in their party who are somewhat sane. And make no mistake, I mean, Jim Jordan got 190-plus votes. A lot of those people who did vote for him did so knowing full well he wasn't going to win. They sort of were free to do it because they needed to protect their flank. And it's sort of, okay, I'm going to go along with the crazies. I don't want Jim Jordan as the speaker, and I know full well that he's not going to get the job, so I'll go ahead and vote for him, knowing he wouldn't. If it were going to be close, a lot of those people would not have supported him.
No, I agree.
So people need to remember that. And I think we're starting to see cracks in this whole MAGA Trumpism nonsense. Because they can only ride that for a while. It's a portion, given it's the largest portion, of the GOP. But the GOP, and admittedly, the Democratic Party, are not the largest components within our political system. In fact, independents constantly make up that part of our electorate. And so you've got a third of the people who self-identify as Republicans, which is about 25% of Americans. So, I mean, think about how ridiculous that is. 8-9% of Americans are making the decision about what gets done in America. There's nothing Democratic about that.
Agreed.
So, yeah, you know, perhaps, you know, like I say, Republicans are slowly starting to come to the realization that this is not where the party needs to be. I think we made the mistake of thinking that come 2020, Trump was defeated and Trumpism was over. No, it turns out that, you know, that it was going to take a while. It's going to be a death by a thousand cuts.
And no, so I see. Steve, here's where I'm going to stop you. I never thought that, and I don't actually know anyone who did. What I thought is it was going to get crazier. So I've kind of predicted the crazier was going to happen because now you've got, you know, they're off the leash. You don't even have Trump to restrain them anymore. They're now even further to the extreme than even Trump is.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Some of them. Now, what I contend is that in 2020, after Trump was defeated, it's not that people thought that these morons were going to go away. It's just that they would be marginalized. A lot of people did not feel that they would come to dominate the Republican Party, you know, going into the 24 election cycle. And it's only now that we're starting to see cracks, and perhaps now we'll start to see some people with some intestinal fortitude standing up and saying, you know what, this is not the right direction for our party. It may cost me something in the long run, it may cost me something in the short run, but I need to make that point. And like I say, I mean, so far I haven't seen much evidence of that. There have been a handful of people, but, you know, who's to say? I think that in the end, it may turn out to be what you're predicting, that we have to go through a crisis, a significant crisis in this country created by the Republicans before enough Americans realize that, you know what, this formula that you bought into as far as MAGA is concerned is a ridiculous formula for governing a modern society. It doesn't work. No one has adopted it anywhere in the world, and for good reason. You can't have a modern, technologically advanced economy and society and not have a strong federal government that is involved intimately in what goes on in that society, because that's where the research and development takes place. And companies don't build infrastructure. Companies don't fund public education. All of the things that we rely upon to forms, the underpinning of what the private sector is, comes from government. But these people apparently believe that, you know what, we can just do away with it tomorrow, and things will go just fine in America. Everything will work. You don't need an FDA. You don't need an FAA, because y'all just get on a plane. It'll work just fine, because the owners say so.
No, no, private corporations will do everything so much better.
Yeah, yeah, because that's worked so well in the past.
We shall see. Steve, I appreciate the time. Good stuff as always.
Thank you.
Look, you know, and look, we could spend a whole day on the privatization schemes that have screwed we, the citizens of this country, over, from privatizing our parking authorities, water and sewer, prisons. I mean, I could spend a whole day on how bad that is. You know, it's crazy what we've allowed to happen to our country in the name of conservative values. Let's go to Alice on line. Well, evidently not. Alice is gone. Oh, Kurt. Okay. Well, I guess we lost Kurt. Anyway, so Scott Perry, my congressman. Scott, pardon me, Perry. Evidently, he thinks that all of the people who are being threatened, he thinks the increase in attacks and threats, it's a red herring. It's a red herring. Perry said, these are people out in the world that dislike us and threaten us. That's nothing new. It's nothing new to any members of Congress. We all know it. It's another red herring. No. I don't agree, Scott. And because I heard some of the tapes, I've read some of the messages. What your Republican colleagues are getting because of people like you is what Democrats have been getting for years. What Ilhan Omar and Rashid Tlaib and AOC, man, some of the crazy that's come out of that. But it's a red herring, he says. But yes, I we have Alice on line one. I knew that was going to happen. Alice, how are you?
Hey, you spoke my name. I had to call, right?
So did your palm start itching or something?
No, my ears were burning.
There you go. What's on your mind?
What I wanted to say was, you know, the Republicans have just thought it's been all fun and games, pushing these lies and propaganda and threatening people and having their base do all this nonsense. And now all of a sudden it's coming back to bite them in the butt, and they don't like it.
A little of their own medicine.
They don't like it at all.
Yeah.
But to go along with something that Kurt said, what they want, this very vocal minority is they want a theocracy, but not the ordinary old-fashioned theocracy. This is sort of like a theocracy run by the lowest IQ bunch.
You mean that gun-toting rich Jesus? You mean that one?
Yes, I was trying to be a little bit polite.
Gun-toting,
really,
greedy
what I
Jesus.
To say. Yes, but you know, honestly, they're just fiddling. Well, you know, the old saying, "Nero fiddled while Rome burned." This is the Republicans are fiddling while the world catches on fire. But have a good evening.
Thanks
Rick.
So much. I don't want to know what Jim Jordan's fiddling with. None of my business. Staying out of all of that. But here's the thing, and the reality is Biden is asking for $105 billion in emergency funds to send for military support in Israel and to continue to provide weapons to Ukraine and you know, humanitarian assistance in Israel and Gaza and Ukraine. You know, this is serious kind of stuff. And as I've been saying for the last couple of days, we don't have a house for the spending bill to emanate from. There's no function, and they're not coming back till Tuesday. So they've already said, "Hey, well, we know you sent us this, and yeah, we might have to do some work, but not till Tuesday. See you next Tuesday." Not a good moment we're in. And look, as I've been saying, and. It's all fun and games until, yeah, you said it's all fun and games until you poke an eye out. It's all fun and games, and it's all hilarity, and it's all, you know, jokes. until something bad happens. And the sad reality is the globe is watching. And this is why I keep coming back to, we need functional government. You know, if you're dysfunctional, do that behind closed doors. It's what we used to do. But you've got to show a face of unity. And I don't think we're capable of that right now as a country. I don't think we're capable of getting behind a president on either side. I don't. I'm really distressed. I go back to 9/11. Everybody got behind George W. Bush. I was not a W fan by any stretch of the imagination. But you never heard me say, you know, we're going to make him a one-termer. I hope he fails. No. What do you need? Let's get something done. Now, what came out of that was a whole bunch of bad policy and a bunch of horrible. But in that moment, we united. The question I guess I have is, are we a country capable of that in this moment? Given the fact that you've got Trump out there for the first time in history, you've got a guy, a former president, coming out and just bashing the current administration. There used to be kind of an unwritten rule that you kind of stayed hush, that you kind of, you know, let the other administration, because you wanted the country at least to do okay, even if you didn't want that guy to do well. We've got an ex-president who wants the country to fail and a huge portion of his supporters.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day mill workers began to walk off the job at the Phoenix and Gilbert knitting mills in Little Falls, New York. The strike was sandwiched between the Bread and Roses strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and the 1913 Patterson textile strike. American, Hungarian, Polish, and Italian workers, over 70% of them women, struck against wage reductions. Their hours had just been cut from 60 hours a week to 54, and their wages adjusted accordingly. A recent Factory Inspection Commission investigation revealed deplorable working and living conditions, among the worst in the state. As a result, state legislators passed protective legislation restricting women's work hours. Many social reformers pushed for laws like these in the hopes of improving women's quality of life by minimizing their exploitation on the job. But the reduction in hours spelled disaster for these mill women, who then faced a loss of income that ranged between 75 cents and $2 a week. Socialists in nearby Schenectady, including the socialist mayor George Lunn, arrived in town and were promptly arrested for giving open-air speeches in support of the strikers. IWW organizers soon followed to help organize picketing, daily strike parades, and strike committees for each of the factories. They quickly established IWW Local 801, the National Industrial Union of Textile Workers. By the end of the month, mounted police closed in on the women strikers and began clubbing them, many into unconsciousness. The police raided strike headquarters and arrested IWW strike committee leaders. But the women strikers stood strong and were celebrating victory by the end of the year. They won full reinstatement and 60 hours pay for 54 hours work.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
If the Democratic Party wants a big, hot issue that would force the GOP to admit its disdain for democracy, how about those Supremes? The Supreme Court, intended to be an apolitical, neutral arbiter of legal cases brought before it, has been elevated to a supreme legislative body by the six-person majority of extreme right-wing partisans now controlling our third branch of government. I'm hardly a legal scholar, unless you count my week and a half in law school, but you don't have to be in who's who to know what's what. From my lifetime in politics, I can attest that what these Republican judges are doing is pure politics, using their black robes as cover for flagrant political activism. Coordinating surreptitiously with right-wing ideologues and corporate money powers that shower favors on them, they intentionally bring up case after case designed to rewrite America's laws. These six aloof judges are effectively enacting a new political order of plutocratic, autocratic, and theocratic power over the beliefs and democratic will of America's pluralistic majority. Posing as conservative jurists, they've steadily concentrated arbitrary lawmaking power in their own hands. Reaching way beyond the court's constitutional role of deciding cases, today's Supremes now effectively create law by choosing cases to bring up, favoring those fabricated by such right-wing political allies as the Koch brothers and the Federalist Society. Moreover, the six partisans even rule on legal questions the case doesn't raise, simply making up and answering their own question. This is Jim Hightower saying, with no legal, ethical, or electoral checks on this secretive, anti-democratic government, the court now routinely rules against workers, women, civil rights, the environment, personal liberties, and, well, against America. Shouldn't we have at least one political party calling them out and reining in their arrogance?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, President Biden's speech yesterday must have been quite well received by Hamas, because they released two U.S. hostages today, a mother and her daughter. Evidently, they said for humanitarian reasons, but, you know, it doesn't just happen. It doesn't just happen. I think, you know, the president's speech last night was spot on. I thought it was the most forceful, the most clear statement I think he could have made. And as I said, you know, thank goodness we've got Joe Biden in the White House in this moment. Because like I said, I don't know where we would be, what kind of tensions would flare, what kind of appeasement we would get out of the former guy. Now, as I've been saying, you know, look, I don't know how much further the Republican Party is going to delve toward the bottom of the barrel until they do hit rock bottom, but they're trying to cover it. They're trying their best to cover it up. And you know, thanks to James Comer, House Oversight Committee Chairman, he now, I guess, he's uncovered breaking news, supposedly what he's calling shady payments to Joe Biden, that evidently isn't really payments. His brother took out a loan, I guess, back in 2018. Paid the loan back a couple of days later. Borrowed the money, paid it back. But it was a troubling loan, according to Comer. And paid it back. And that's, I think, probably where Republicans had a problem. You know, they like borrowing money. They just don't like paying it back. But I found it interesting, you know, that they didn't really focus on the fact that it was 2018. And I'm trying to check my calendar to see who was in the White House at the time. It wasn't Joe Biden. Now, here's the thing. I go back to the same thing I said about Hunter Biden. I don't know what he did. Don't really care what he did. If he did anything wrong, if he did anything illegal, he should be tried, given his opportunity to defend himself, and if found guilty, shown the Gray Bar Hotel. Same thing with Brother James. The thing that I find ironic is you've got Trump out here trumpeting this stuff too. But again, it's one of those things where, as my mother said, if you point your finger at someone, you got three pointing back at you. When are we going to start looking into Jared Kushner, Dumb Jr., Ivanka? I don't know if you've noticed, but she's been asked for the courts to quash her subpoena so that she doesn't have to testify. Because once she gets under oath, who knows where they go? This, again, is another one of these moments where I find it interesting listening to the folks who are making these claims. When you look in their closet, lots of skeletons. Now, should we have a conversation about how nepotism works? Yeah, but it's like the third or fourth oldest thing in the history of humankind. Do you not remember, you know, Billy Carter and Billy Beer? Do you not remember, you know, Ronald Reagan's kids and the stuff that came out of that? Do you not remember Roger Clinton? I mean, we've all had, every administration's had that family member that goes, I've got the name. And, you know, I might have some influence. And I said from the beginning, when this first started, there's going to be nothing here because Biden's not that stupid. He's not going to take a couple of crumbs just because, hey, oh, someone gave us.
It's not going to happen. Now, did family members use their name? Absolutely. Without question. Did they make promises that they probably knew they'd never be able to keep? Sure. You get shady people doing shady stuff. But to use this as the basis, as a cover for your inability to govern, I don't know. Is that right? Is that where we should be? Should we impeach Joe Biden over his family? Man, if that were the bar, how many of us would be thrown out of whatever it is we tried to do because of some family member? Just remarkable. Now, evidently Donald Trump was fined $5,000 in the civil fraud trial. He was told there are terms to this gag order, which, again, I've said from the start, I am against the gag orders. I don't know how you're going to enforce it. I just think it makes him look like more of a martyr. But I was reading early on that this could be big. There could be jail time. There could be big fines. There could be real consequences for what the judge said was a blatant violation of the gag order. Fines, possibly prison, $5,000 fine. Yeah. Like, what? $5,000 fine. That's it. Okay. Yeah. So if he's going to do that, you might as well have him if that's the penalty every day. So he gets to look like a martyr and gets the headline in the newspaper. What a cheap way to get a headline. But here's one I'm sure he's not thrilled with. Yesterday, it was the Kraken. Sidney Powell got probation. 6 years probation, a small fine. All she's got to do is tell the truth. The whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help her, the judge who will take away the sweetheart deal and throw her in jail. Today... Kenny Cheesebro. And look, I don't know how you go through life with a name like Cheesebro, but Kenny Cheesebro, he pled guilty today too. Only his wasn't the Coffee County thing in Georgia. This was the fake electors. But he has gotten a deal. And maybe if he'd have gotten this a day earlier, maybe he'd have gotten a sweetheart deal. But he pled to one felony count of conspiracy to file false documents, and he faces a 1 to 5 year prison sentence. And he has to allocute. He has to say what he did, and he has to tell the truth. He's got to testify. So this means star witnesses are lining up, people who were there, intimately involved in these crimes, and saying, "Yeah, we did this at that guy's behest." And they're all going to point their fingers. And remember, I said probably a year and a half ago, that the rats are going to jump ship. Again, not clairvoyant, don't have a crystal ball, not particularly bright. But anyone knows that when these folks start looking at the kind of jail time that was possible in this, oh, they're not doing that. And now Sidney Powell, I mean, she's also facing this massive lawsuit from one of the voting machine companies. Her personally. So what's been circulating also is, she pled guilty because she didn't want to have any of the testimony come out in the criminal trial that would certainly be used against her in the civil trial. So she's just basically saving her behind and her pocketbook. And as I've said, none of these folks who were high worth folks, none of these people are going to take a fall for Trump. None of these people are going to be that loyal. And look, she was the crazy of the crazy. I mean, it's been reported by the Trump camp, everyone inside is, secret mole inside, is that, people are shocked that the Kraken turned. I'm not. I'm waiting for Rudy to flip when he realizes he's going to be homeless. Or maybe he has to go to jail so he at least has a cot. Not quite sure. But I remember her during the 2020 debacle. I remember she was a true believer. She was in. She really believed to her core what she was pushing. and she got set off into the wind. So I got to tell you, I don't think Trump is sleeping all that well. Maybe lay off the Adderall. I don't know. But things not looking good for him. And look, we need this as a country. You need these people who were intimately involved with this to say, look, this is what we did. That's why allocution is so important. This is what we did. This is why we did it. This is who told us to do it. This has to come out. We cannot heal as a country. We cannot come back to some bit of normalcy. You know, I mentioned a moment ago that you've got Trump running around attacking Joe Biden daily. That is not normal. That is not the world that I grew up in. That is not the country that we used to be. Pre-Trump, this doesn't happen. You didn't hear Jimmy Carter attacking Ronald Reagan. You didn't hear George H.W. Bush attacking Bill Clinton daily. You didn't hear Clinton going after W. You didn't hear Gore going after W. You didn't hear Gore going after Obama. You didn't hear Romney going after Obama. You didn't hear any of that stuff. Not until Donald Trump. Because it's not about the good of the country. It's not about what's good for working people. It's not about how we're going to move forward and be that shining city on the hill. Be that place that people want to come to, not out of desperation, but of high aspiration. That this is the place that makes dreams. This is the how do we get back to that? Right now we're in a spiral. And sadly, what is happening is we're being just shredded, ripped apart. I mean, they can't even get a speaker. This should be the simplest of tasks. You are the majority. Get into a room, hammer it out. There's got to be one person that's palatable to all of the Republicans. There's got to be one. But there's not. And this is going to go on for quite some time. Until finally those moderate-esque Republicans go to the Democrats. We're gonna vote for your guy. With conditions. And those conditions could be any number of things. The kind of legislation that can come to the floor. The kind of who controls the committees. You know, that kind of stuff. There's a lot of possibilities. But I don't see the Republicans coming up with a Republican speaker. I just, at this moment, don't. Not with people like Scott Perry running around. Just don't see it. Which is why, again, I'm hoping November of 2024, we throw these bums out and reclaim the idea of government of, for, and by we the people. Reclaim the idea that we can solve big problems, that we can do big things, that we can make lives better. That seems, I know, aspirational. Rick, you're aiming too high. We can't get a speaker. Yeah, I know. But I have faith in the American people. I have a faith in us to, at some, look, we make mistakes. I have faith in us to look at each other and go, okay, you're not so bad. And finally, maybe, possibly. Look, we're not going to all agree on every issue, but get somewhere between the curbs. We got to get off the sidelines, off the sidewalks, throwing bombs at each other. Get back into the middle of the street. We may not agree on every issue, but agree that we need to get something done. We have people in Washington, D.C., well, actually now back home in their district, since they recessed, again, taking a day off with pay. We have people who don't believe that our government should do anything. And as Steve, the caller earlier, said, look, you know, government can do certain things: education, infrastructure, clean water and air, rules and regulations of the game of business, a social safety net. Only we the people through our government can do that. But we can't do that this with this kind of dysfunction. So please, in the next election, I don't care who you vote for, at least have them be someone who believes that government can and should do a job to solve problems, to make lives better. Start there. Then maybe we can talk about all the other stuff. But right now, we can't get a speaker. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back at the after this.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1926. That was the day that one of the great labor leaders in U.S. history, Eugene V. Debs, died in Elmhurst, Illinois. In 1894, Debs gained national attention when his American Railway Union launched a boycott in support of the striking workers of the Pullman Palace Car Company. The strike and the boycott were crushed by federal troops and a federal court. Debs served 6 months in jail for his role in the boycott. Later, Debs would again go to jail for standing up for his beliefs. He was convicted for speaking out against U.S. involvement in World War I. He was among the founders of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, in 1905. He ran as a socialist for President of the United States 5 times, receiving nearly 1 million votes running his campaign from a prison cell in 1920. In 1891, Debs wrote an article for the Locomotive Fireman's Magazine titled The Unity of Labor. His words stand as an eloquent case for worker solidarity. Debs wrote, quote, "If working men were united in sympathetic bonds, if a bricklayer could comprehend the fact that he is dependent on the hod carrier, if the locomotive engineer could grasp the fact that he is dependent on the locomotive fireman, the interdependence of labor would at once constitute a bond of union, a chain whose link, forged and fashioned to hold working men in harmonious alliance, would girt them with a defense in every time of trouble and resist invasion, though assailed by all the plutocrats that ever cursed the earth." Debs spent his life trying to bring about this harmonious alliance of working people and standing up for the causes of peace and justice. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Sandy sent me an email during the break. She said, "Rick, you're absolutely right. Right-wing media is the problem. Outside of you, Jon Stewart, Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, there are no voices on the left to compete." And she sent an article because she's quite distraught that Jon Stewart evidently is going away again this time. And good on Jon Stewart, man. I'm with him on this. Evidently, you know, because I loved Jon Stewart's program, The Problem. I thought it was very well done. I think he's one of the smartest guys in media. But evidently, Apple wasn't thrilled. Apple, as my oldest daughter said as a child, Apple don't happy. Evidently, they had some topics that Apple wasn't thrilled with, and it was reported as they were having creative differences. They were having creative differences, you know, should we have a red backdrop or a blue backdrop? No, it wasn't that. Evidently, they wanted to talk about China and artificial intelligence in the upcoming season, and that was of great concern for the Apple folks. Because Apple, well, depends heavily on China, and they want to take over the world with AI. So of course they don't want Jon Stewart doing what Jon Stewart does best, which is making very important points and shaming our Congress for not acting on the China or the AI or, well, anything else. So they're evidently no more show. Stewart. It's being framed in a couple of different ways. It was a mutual parting of the ways, or it was just Jon Stewart going, blank you. I'm not going to be silenced. Now, here's the weird thing. here's the weird thing. I get this a lot from people, that the right-wing outrage machine is so powerful. The right-wing outrage machine, you know, has so much, you know, so many outlets. Look, and as I've been saying recently, and I'm going to be saying a lot more here for the short term. You know, we're probably on every station we can be on, just about. We've hit, you know, near the top. We're recognized as one of the top 100 talk radio programs in the country by Talkers Magazine. You know, we're at the top of our game, and there's no money in this. There's the left does not fund. They talk about it. They talk about the need to, we need to have, you know, voices that are going to, you know, compete with the right. We need to talk to the little people. You know, we need to talk to working people. Just don't know how. And they don't fund things like this. They don't fund infrastructure. You know, as has been said a lot of times, you know, Republicans fall in line, Democrats fall in love. And that comes with their money as well. You know, Republican donors built massive infrastructure, control talk radio. If I were a right winger, and I've had this told to me by radio executives, if you just change your view, if you just go over to the dark side, oh, you'd be rolling in cash. You could make beds of it. You could use them for cigars. And you could probably be on, you know, 300-400 radio stations without question. There aren't 300 radio stations that you can be on doing the kind of content that I do. And look, I'm a labor guy. I'm always upfront about that. I'm a union guy. I think the way we reunite this country is by reunionizing this country, by getting people better wages, hours, conditions, by solving problems in the workplace, by empowering people in the workplace to solve problems. Because once you do it at work, once you have that power at work, you know what you do? You take it home with you. And you're empowered to make change in your community. And if you want to change the world, you change your little piece of it. Make that a better place and make the next guy want to make his area better. That's that kind of that really great organizing that can happen. Sadly, we're not doing that. It's amazing to me how many people go, you know, I listen to your show and, you know, I don't agree with everything, but, you know, I've never heard anything like that before. You make good sense. We need, just like I say about the Republican Party, we need a Republican Party. We need a functional Republican Party. And I know, how dare you say that, Rick? That's heresy. Don't say that. No, we do. In this country, we need, you can't give one side everything they want. You've got to have some compromise. And sadly, that's a four-letter word. Bad. And our media structure plays into this because it's owned by a handful of corporations. You know the statistics as well as everybody. Six corporations control 90% of everything we see, hear, and read. Do you think it's in their interest to control the information, much like Jon Stewart? You want to do what? You want to talk about China? Oh, no. You know, John Cena, tough guy. Learn Mandarin to apologize for saying just off the cuff something about Taiwan. The kind of power that they wield, because it's all about the money. It's always about the money. It's about the greed. And honestly, until we working people start claiming media, start supporting programs like ours, follow, grab our podcast, subscribe to our podcast, watch our free speech TV show, email us. Interaction is important. This is how we're going to organize and move this country forward. This is how we're going to claw back some bit of dignity and respect for work. This is how we're going to leave something worth inheriting to our children. This is how we have to do it. The kind of childish nonsense that we see coming out of DC right now has to stop. Now, you look at Jon Stewart and in Sandy's email, you know, the fact that, you know, there are only a handful of programs like ours. know, I say all the time, I'm on a list of 100 top talk shows in the country. 95 of them hate working people. 95 of them wake up every day deciding how they can help destroy labor unions and how they can take out the Democratic Party and the policies that Democrats push for, which are good for working people. I say all the time, you know, progressive policies are really popular, but right-wing media has made progressives really unpopular. But the policies people love, because Republicans don't really have policies. But you know what the right has? They got tons of money. And how I know this is, well, a Texas judge ruled that InfoWars guy, Alex Jones, he's going to have to pay that $1.1 billion to the Sandy Hook families. And you go, wow, he doesn't have that. Well, that's the argument he's making. But in his filing, his attorneys are saying he's worth $14 million.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.